Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. And not just Code Delicious today, it's one of my favorite segments, Culinary CPR. And Nation, you want to get over to ChefDrMike.com and subscribe to the newsletter, because when we do the Culinary CPR segments, and you are subscribed to the newsletter in your mailbox before the show comes on every Wednesday at 7:30 a.m. Eastern, you're going to have the recipe ahead of time so you can follow along. You can look at the ingredients. You can get all the information. You're going to be well ahead of the curve. The only person you're not going to be ahead of is our next guest, Chef Luca. You know him, you love him. I can't live without him. He's the amazing, he's the one and only. He is the executive chef at Luca's Mediterranean Cafe. He runs the market at Luca's. He's dominated Food Network, wasting the competition on Guy's Grocery Games. He's been New Hampshire's Chef of the Year. I'm just not sure there's anything that this guy hasn't done. He's got his own radio show, TV show. I'm just honored that he'll deign to slum a little and work with us here today. I'm really excited about what he's brought to the table, if you will. Always got to get our puns in because short ribs are some of my just absolute favorite product to work with. So, Chef, once again, welcome, my friend.
What is up, big guy? I am excited to be on your show today. Yeah, short ribs. You know, I can't think of a more perfect comfort food that just hits everything. You know, everybody talks about all these really great, amazing cuts of meat. It's like the ribeye, and you get that off the, you know, that, sure, that beautiful cut. And then the tenderloin, and you get your sirloin cut. But give me a nice piece of braised short rib, whether it's from the short plate, you know, the with the bone in it, right, or you could even pull some off of off the chuck. There are like these parts of the chuck and that you could pull off, and they're flankin, or they work like a short rib, and they're amazing pieces of square beef that you sear, you braise for a long time, you add tons of flavor, and then they melt in your mouth. And what's better than that? I don't know.
And you and I together on the air, there's nothing better than
that. Oh, okay. But, I like that one. But, there you go.
But next time, hey, so why don't you, if you could share with the folks a little bit, because, you know, some folks don't really understand where short ribs are. You were talking about beef short ribs.
Right.
Where do they come from, and how come sometimes, you know, folks, you'll see them with bones and sometimes you won't?
Right. So, and when you go to the supermarket, you're going to find different cuts of short rib. There's some that get used, like the Korean short rib or for Korean cuisine. That comes off of. So let's start from the when you look at a cow, that upper part on their shoulder is where the chuck is, right? You're going to get what's considered a chuck short rib, or what's kind of like a flanken short rib. These are parts of the chuck that, as you pull apart, and as a butcher, they know how to already butcher this out, so it's absolutely perfect. And that's the part I like using. I love using it off the chuck, and they're fatty, really perfectly marbleized and fat. And when you cook it down, the sinew breaks down perfectly. There's those. There's some that you get where the beef back ribs, again, more for that Korean cuisine type, that come off the prime rib part. And then underneath the prime rib, so the chuck is the shoulder, a little behind the shoulder. If we were doing the human back, you know, right behind our shoulder blade, there'd be that rib if we were the cow. And then below that rib, in what would look on us, on our belly, is what's called a short plate. And this is where you're going to get plate short ribs. These are the ones with bones in them that you'll see in some fancy restaurants. But from those three parts, and you go to your meat guy and you say, I want short ribs, and you tell him what you want, and you're going to be able to find different versions of the short rib that way. And you can make incredible food from each of them. Now, with the bone, it's great. It's going to add more flavor. But I lose a lot. You know, you're paying for the bone, too.
Right.
So
right. That's
one thing. Generally, why I like chuck short ribs is because of the fact that it's all meat. And the way I cook it, low and slow, 3-4 hours, braised with this beautiful mirepoix and some tomato paste and red wine, rosemary and garlic and thyme. Really simple. Once you're done with that, you have an incredible piece of meat. And then we're going to serve it with polenta. And I got a funny story with polenta with my mom, so we'll get to that too.
And you bring up, you know, these, they're incredibly flavorful, but they can be a little tough if you don't cook them correctly. So, you know, what you're saying, and we've talked before about braising with these cuts of meat, are really good. And I got to give a shout out because Nation, I've been working for you. So the last, you know, couple of months, I've been going through. I'm very often approached by folks saying, hey, Dr. Mike, we'd like to work with you. You know, what do you think of this product, that product? And I got to tell you, you know, 90% of it, you know, I got to back away from. It's right. Just not good stuff. I wouldn't recommend it. But, you know, I've been working with a great group, 1MD. They make some really quality supplements for people who need certain supplements of things, but also the folks at ButcherBox. And I love these guys. So, and I don't know if you're familiar with them, Chef, but I absolutely love what they do. So they've gone out to all these small farms that are working with, you know, heritage type breeds of primarily they're working with chicken, pork, and beef right now. And really securing, you know, grass-fed, organic, pastured, quality, you know, kind of craft butchery, small block foods. And they you know, you can have them delivered to your house. So if you live in New York City or you're a place that doesn't have access, you know, I know some butchers, you know, I go out and visit where they raise a lot of these animals, but not everybody has that. I know you go up the street often and you have access sure. to, you know, some incredible pork, but not everybody does. And not everybody has the time to source like a chef. Head out to Butcher Box, put in Chef Dr. Mike, in the coupon code, and, you're going to get like a special discount. So I've been working with these guys, incredibly high quality stuff. And the reason I bring it up is they sent me some short ribs. And
no way.
So I was, yeah. And so I was evaluating in the box came these short ribs. And so I went out and I don't want to, you know, talk negatively about anyone, but it was one of the big, you know, types of grocery stores where we go to get our high quality, you know, grass fed, high end, very expensive meats. And I prepared the same cut exactly the same way. And man, I was really blown away by the difference. I shouldn't have been, but I was really blown away by how much more tender and flavorful, you know, the Butcher Box was, you know, versus the other ones that actually cost even more and I had to run out and get them. So, you know, if you don't have a butcher that you can go to and you want to get that really good grass-fed organic stuff, because I've got a new book coming out and I'm finishing it up right now, folks. And let me tell you, the data on the difference when you source quality product like Chef does and you're getting and he's serving you in his restaurant, you know, this grass-fed pastured heritage breed type of stuff, man, that is a world of not only flavor difference, but health difference as well. And I just wanted to put that out there because it does, you know, it does make such a difference and it makes a difference how we cook it. So, you know, tell me a little bit about how you braise them.
Well, I gotta tell you, while you're going on about ButcherBox, that's
yeah.
ButcherBox, B-O-X, right? Am I on the right page?
Right. You're right.
I luckily have a TV screen for my computer screen.
You are so techie, man.
You
are so techie. You're like 22nd century, man.
I'm looking at this.
You
stuff
got a,
and,
you got a TV screen. I got a pad of paper and a pen in front of me. Jeez.
I feel
like I should pull out my inkwell and quill.
Yeah, but you'd make that look good, man. So as far as, yeah, wow, this is really good. ButcherBox.com. I think it looks like wonderful. I think I'm going to have to order something off of there. You know what's great is because if you could source ingredients like that where they're doing all the work for you, why wouldn't you do that? Yeah. You know, if they're going out and finding grass-fed, pasteurized meats, and you know that we've talked about it, you were just talking about
yep.
it. I think it's really important to let someone get you that stuff and pay a couple of dollars more maybe here and there, but ultimately you're getting a better product and why not do it? But let's get into the braised short ribs, talk a little yep. bit about what it is, you know, you're going to go to your store, you're going to go butcherbox.com, you're going to ask for your short ribs, you get nice, you know. Now, what's crazy is I looked at the recipe I sent you. It's actually my recipe from the restaurant. So basically, if you're going to be doing 10 pounds of short ribs, this recipe crushes it.
It's perfect. So,
I just opened it up and I said, oh, I didn't adjust. I got 10 pounds of boneless beef short rib on here. And
I'll do the math for you. We put it out. Folks, when it comes to the newsletter, I've done the math for you. Don't worry.
All right, good, because it's going to be there, man. So, but think about a good amount of short ribs, and you're gonna go to your butcher. You're gonna go to Butcher Box. You're gonna find it, get it in, and then basically the ingredients are gonna be onions, tomato paste, garlic cloves, olive oil, because I know how you like olive oil, so we could change that on my thing. Red wine, a good red wine that you would drink, but not overly expensive. That if you didn't drink it, you'd felt bad about doing it. Never use anything like. And I think we've said this a million times, but it's good to stress. If it says cooking wine, do not do it. It's just loaded with sodium. There's no need for it.
That's right.
You know what? There's really good. You're looking for something inexpensive. There are incredible boxed wines out there that are basically they're a boxed version of the wines that you could get in bottles. That don't need super aging or anything like that, because 90% of the wines out there aren't about aging the wine in the bottle. They're already ready to drink. So get them in a box, and you could use that for cooking. So you're spending less because you're not paying for the packaging, and you're going to get wine that you could drink, too, at the same time, and it doesn't change in the quality as you're pouring it out of your box. And people think I'm crazy.
I always cook with wine, and occasionally it goes in the food.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. a quart of veal demi-glaze. Now, for those who can't get veal demi-glaze or make your own like we do and spend your 3 days of, you know, roasting the bones and then roasting your mirepoix and then letting it sit on a low flame for 2.5 days and then straining and then reducing, you know, a really good beef stock will help, but there's nothing like a veal demi. And they're selling decent ones out there. But if you can make your own, hey, I'm wondering if ButcherBox has one. Who knows? But there's this is one of those things that we have an advantage to. Mike, maybe if you know of a home way to do this that won't break the bank for them, or, you know, it's something that doesn't involve all the time that we have to put it in.
Well, you know, so. I think this is one of those great things, like making stock, where you know you're going to be home. Maybe, you know, it's fall or it's spring. You're watching ball games or you're watching movies. You're going to be around the house. Like you said, you can put it on a low flame. You don't want to, you know, go out and watch the feature film for 4 hours and come back and find everything's burned down. But if you're going to be around the house, you just have to check on it. So that's a great time, I think, you know, to do things like stocks, to do things like the demi-glace, etc. Because you're going to be around, you come back, you check on it. Hey, yeah, you know, it's reducing, and you go do whatever you need to do for a couple hours. You come back, still reducing. And there's just, and I think you would agree, Chef, you know, to me, when people follow the recipe verbatim and they say, you know, it just doesn't taste quite like it does when I went to Luca's place, the difference is Luca's got that homemade stock. And it's so important in terms of what you can put into it and what you don't put in. And again, something that I'm going to be talking about because it's I talked a little bit about it in Fallacy of the Calorie for folks that have that book. And if you don't, you definitely want to get it because it's the springboard for this new book that I'm very excited about, if you couldn't tell. there's just been, in the last about 3 years since Fallacy came out, a just explosion of research on the gut microbiome. So all these things that folks, you know, Chef, that the big suppliers put in to keep the stocks and the demis preserved on the store shelves, you know, without refrigeration, we're finding that they can potentially really alter the bacteria in our gut and cause, you know, all these diseases that we see. And folks don't realize, you know, we in the United States are really spoiled by the wide variety of foods and foodstuffs we can choose from, but we don't choose wisely because if you look around the globe, we have the highest burden of disease, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, etc. And, you know, the bulk of that far and away is due to the quality of the foods we choose. So, you know, if you can't eat at Lucas Restaurant every night, like me, because I can't, and I'm still waiting for the invite to get over there, you know, then you've got to find a way to craft some of these things at home. And it's incredibly important, not only for the flavor, but for the function.
And I think if you're, that's right. I mean, this is where you're building blocks to really good traditional, amazing food starts with putting in the time and effort. I mean, I've worked with chefs over time and, you know, and different people, and just recently with one who kept stressing to me, he goes, Luca, it's not about what you do after this, but it's important that these four stocks we make are amazing. Everything else will fall into place after that.
Yep.
And it's true. If you start with that building block, you're going to keep making it better and better and better. And it's not that it's not important to do everything else right after, but if you forget this spot, you're going to see the difference about the amount of time. Time equals benefit, and we are benefiting by putting the time in. So we have the veal demi. I really, if people can get it, that's great. You know, some restaurants even will sell their demi around. You could do that, or you make your own, whatever it needs to be. So I'm going to run through really doing this quickly.
God, so if you need some more, if you need some more, that would be demi more, right?
Good one. I'm going to use that. I have a demi on the stove right now. I guess we have to cook it a little more. Oh, good. I got
that'll
that
be a little demi
man.
More. Yeah.
I love it. So you're going to put your oven at 300 degrees. That gets the process started because you're going to be needing that a little bit. You're going to take the beef that you get in. You're going to dry it really well because you want to get a good sear on it. And the most important way to get a good sear is to have a dry piece of meat. If it's wet, bloody, sweating, it's not going to get the sear that you want. The caramelization doesn't happen. All that doesn't happen. So that's why, you know, there are some meats where you put flour. Now, there are people who will always flour just like you do when you're doing like a beef stew. You're going to flour your meat and then sear it. So you're going to use that also to make the sauce. I like to do a total gluten-free version of my short ribs. I don't feel like it needs flour at all. So I just do salt and pepper on really dry, on the dry beef. I sear it. I get a big rondeau, which is a big pot, or if you have one of the Le Creuset or the
yeah, he's a Dutch oven.
Lodges, a Dutch oven. If you have one of those, because I keep thinking, again, I'm doing 10 pounds, so my pot's like right. Way too big. But if you're using a Dutch oven, you have a couple of pounds of short rib, you're going to get oil in there and get it to where it's quite almost smoking, but not super. And then you're going to salt, pepper, and sear on all sides of the beef until golden brown. You're going to take the beef out after it's been seared. Reduce the heat to about medium. You're going to add the onion, soften that, getting it barely brown. You don't want to get the onions too dark. You're not trying to caramelize them. You're just getting them a little bit brown, not too heavy. When you have the onions in, you're going to add the tomato paste. Stir it constantly until it browns all sides. From the bottom of the pan, you have the fond on the bottom of the pan that was there from the... You have all that going on. You add the garlic in and cook until fragrant, but not too much, about 30 to 60 seconds. Turn the heat up to medium-high. You add the wine. Simmer, scraping up the fond from the sides of the bottom. Simmer until reduced. You get all this flavor in there. Now you add in the veal stock, the carrots, and then I do a cheesecloth of herbs, which is basically thyme, bay leaf, parsley. You could add rosemary in there, all wrapped in a cheesecloth, because I don't want to have to pick them out, because you'll see why in a second. Some people could throw them all in if you're just going to strain, but I actually blend part of my carrots and tomato and onions to thicken my stock at the end of this. So you want to get that all together. Then you add back the beef and any of the juices that collected with the beef that was sitting on the side, and you cover and bring this to a simmer. Now you transfer it to oven for about 2 to 2.5 hours, and you turn the meat halfway through during the cooking process, because the thing about braising anything is not you're not submerging it all the way. The liquid comes about 3/4 up on the beef that you're braising. So the top's going to get a little bit browner. I like to flip that over during the process, and then I'm cooking everything evenly. So I've braised for 2 to 2.5 hours. I've let it go, into the 3-hour range. You don't want to go too far, because then you just have pulled pulled short rib, and then but it's that's delicious, but we don't have to do that. So you have these pieces of short rib that I pre-portioned, but you could have a bigger piece of short rib that they give you, however you get it from your butcher. I take that out. I allow the braising liquid to cool just a little bit, and because it's already reduced and everything, I take away the cheesecloth herbs. I take half of the braising liquid vegetable, put that in a blender with some liquid, and I puree that, put it through a strainer or a mesh strainer, right. Add that to the rest of my liquid that was strained, and I get this creamy, rich sauce that didn't need any thickening agent. We use the carrots and the celery, carrots and the onions to help thicken, but they've been strained so you don't have any pieces or grittiness, and it's an amazing sauce. I usually maybe throw in a pat of butter near the end to give it a little silkenness. I have all that flavor that's been in there, and I serve it over polenta. I love it with polenta. I love it with braised broccoli rabe. Those two things, and I also finish one of my favorite things on top of short ribs is salsa verde.
Nice.
Because growing up there in Italy, we had this thing. Every time you do boiled meats, you'll always have salsa verde on it, which is basically anchovies, parsley, a little bit of stale bread, capers, garlic, a little bit of vinegar, extra virgin olive oil, and pepper, pureed into like a pesto, and you put that on top, and that kind of bite, that acidic bite, the anchovy, you know, the saltiness cuts right through all the fat, and oh my God, I want this dish right now. That's all I'm saying.
that sounds real good. So you gotta now you told me that you got to relate something about the polenta and your mom.
People who follow me on Facebook, I put a picture up of my mom. She worked in the restaurant with me the other day. I had one of those days where a lot of people were calling out sick, which is always fun when you're working in a kitchen. And I have two restaurants. One is more of a quick service place, and one's a fine dining restaurant. And I was working in the quick service place, and then my counter people call out, and something else happened, and I get this busy day, and I'm calling people, and all my managers are doing something else, and we have the restaurant. And I go, Ma, I need help. Now, my mother's been in the business since 1975, I think, even maybe sooner before that. She's always been in the food business, one of the best cooks I've ever met. She makes dinner for us, you know, every night of my life until I got to move out and live on my own. She is 90% of the reason of my food today is based on what I learned from her. That being said, she's in the kitchen with me, kicking butt. I'm like, Ma, can you do this? Yeah, I got this. I had to run next door. I was making my polenta cakes, which is, it's a real simple. Yeah, I use white polenta as a fine cornmeal, and then I do a 3-part water to 1-part polenta and a cornmeal, and I add a little bit of parmigiano and butter. It's a simple recipe for this that goes underneath my short rib. So I go, Ma, I got to run next door. Do you know how to make polenta?
Sorry.
That moment I said it, I went, I just asked my mother if she knows how to make polenta. She was making polenta while I was still in diapers, and is the best cook I've ever met in my life. I cannot believe I asked her that question. It's like saying to Hank Aaron, can you hit a home run? What was I thinking? And I looked at her, and she gave me a smile, because she never, it's amazing how good she is to me. She gave me a smile, and I looked at her. I said, Ma, if I would have said that to any chef, any other chef, can you make polenta? They would have probably yelled at me. Like, are you kidding me? You asked me. And you just smiled. She goes, I thought it was kind of funny that you actually asked me that question. It was one of those moments that I got used to saying to my staff, you know, can you do this? And oh my gosh, it was so much fun to work with her for a day.
I think she should have just looked at you and said, hold my beer.
Yeah, pretty much.
and brought you back this, you know, tray of perfect polenta cakes.
It was a moment in time where I caught myself saying something like, I'm glad it was to my mother, though. That's all I got to tell you. Because I hugged her and I said, sometimes I get lost in the moment, Mom. I know she runs circles around me, and she's 70, and she kicks butt. And I'm lucky to have shared that moment with her in the kitchen, and we had a big laugh about it afterwards too.
That is great, and that is, you know, you just put together really a classic combination. I do that a lot too. That there's just something about that creamy polenta and the short ribs and, you know, the sauce. I like to do it the way you do it. And also when you're braising, what you're also doing is breaking down a lot of those collagen and cartilage type fibers. And that's a natural gelatin. So that adds sort of, to me, another layer of silkiness. Also adds, you know, another layer of important health benefits. So we're learning that when we consume not just the fillets that you were talking about, not just ribeye after, you know, ribeye, but when we take these, what we might call in the old days, less desirable cuts that have some of these elements, we're you know, boosting the flavor, adding a variety of textures, and chef, you're delivering us some, you know, wonderful, healthful meal.
Yeah, it's a blast to do, and it's so easy. I mean, once you get your first braising down and your first short rib done, you get more comfortable with it. And for people who do pot roast, for people who do, you know, beef stews, a lot of the same processes are involved, and why not do a short rib? And why not try something different and create a sauce that has a ton of flavor? I mean, go out and give it a shot. And it's, you know, they're not as cheap as they once used to be. Do you remember, like, when we first
could get some of these undesirable butcher cuts?
Yeah, you could get them for nothing. Now all the fancy restaurants took them over and they charge you $30 a plate. I don't know when that happened, but you know, it's something great to do, and we love doing it. And it's really about balancing too. I mean, we talk about, you know, I mentioned the salsa verde, so you have someone kind of breaking through that acidity. When you do something like that with an osso buco and you're braising other stuff, just a little lemon zest and fresh parsley and garlic on top, you know, to do something like that makes a huge difference in tasting the fatty richness of this dish through a different perspective. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You and I have too much fun cooking.
It is, and thanks for sharing that, because braising is definitely something you folks want to, you know, add to your repertoire, experiment with, and always let us know how it's going. You can let Luca know at www.lucaparis.com. Follow him at Chef Luca on Twitter, also Luca Paris on Facebook. You know me, chefdrmike.com, where you can get a hold of me, same moniker on Facebook and Twitter. And Nation, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.